This is Scott Richmond.
And Arnie Sherman.
You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM.
Arnie Sherman, good Sunday morning to you.
Hey, good to be here. Good to see you, Scott. We have a good show again. We're on a streak of lots of interesting, diverse guests. And today we have probably one of our most diverse because he has two whole things going on at the same time. One, it's Rick Bass, you know, who's a
Rick Bass,
prolific author, has written 30 fiction and nonfiction books. He's won awards for his writing. At the same time, he's an environmental activist up in the Yaak Valley, and he's bringing to town here in a week or so the Black Ram Guitar Festival, which is really kind of a cool thing. We're going to talk to him about, and they're going to have what is known as the Breedlove Black Ram guitar, which is made out of a fallen tree in the forest to sort of, commemorate you can build beautiful guitars and not have to tear trees down to do it. They use it from a fallen tree, and it's one of the trees and one of the projects that Jeff Bridges has embraced.
Right.
You know, with his We're All in This Together campaign. It has a line of these guitars that are made from fallen trees from the Black Ram Forest in the Yaak Valley. So we're going to be talking about all this environmental stuff and how the Park Service wants to do a 90,000-acre harvesting of this, you know, primordial forest.
Which is incredible.
Hundreds of year-old trees that they're – and of course, it's been blocked by Judge Malloy. And, you know, a lot of people know about this. And so you have Rick, who lives up there and is an advocate for environmental, but at the same time
– issues, right.
He writes beautiful – you know, prose, you know, both fiction and nonfiction, and has for, 30-some years.
So, any way he could communicate about the plight of environmental issues or facing the spate of environmental issues, he finds a way of communicating it, whether it be through music or prose or speaking out and giving speaking
right, lecturing. He's lectured at a number of universities,
right,
including the University of Montana. But, you know, I guess these... The forest is an inspiration and also a cause at the same time in his life, because he's chosen to live up there and
right,
to interact with this environment and then write prolifically about it.
Right.
You know, both in real terms and nonfiction. And then he's created these beautiful short stories in fiction, which, you know, in 2016, won the Story Award for the best short. He's considered one of the best short story writers in the world.
I know. It's
so
amazing.
So it's a really good, interesting combination. I'd like to into figuring out what's his, you know, drive, motivation, inspiration. Because early in his career, he worked for Weyerhaeuser, and he also worked for oil and gas companies. So he was on the other side of the equation.
Maybe that's what moved him here.
Yeah, maybe. And maybe we'll find out about that when we talk to him.
Arnie, you know, we're also going to talk to him about his travels because, you know, if you follow Rick, he's traveled everywhere.
Yeah.
And seen everything.
Well, we want to hear about everything that he's seen.
Exactly. We want to hear about everything he's seen. And then, you know, you and I always like to finish a good conversation talking about food.
Right. I wonder what he eats up in the Yaak Valley beside what he hunts. I know he hunts.
Yeah.
He's a hunter.
He is a hunter, but let's ask him about that, too. Our guest will be, you know, and here's the interesting thing about Rick. He actually, and I'm interrupting myself, Rick hosted a grizzly bear awareness event at my home like 8 years ago.
Really?
Yes. Yes. He, you know, thanks to the great Blake Nicolazzo from Bonfire Communications,
right,
she brought Rick to the table and a lot of friends of his, and we hosted an event.
Kathy and I wasn't invited?
You were invited. I think you were traveling.
Yeah, probably traveling. So you had an event about traveling, and I was traveling, so I couldn't participate. Perfect combination.
Anyway, Rick Bass will be our guest right after these words.
Okay, Arnie, we are back with our guest, Rick Bass.
Rick, it's a pleasure to have you. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Great to be here.
So we have a lot to unpack today. I'd like to focus a little bit on you personally and your background and your history, your story. And then I'd like to talk about the Black Ram Project and the guitar festival and all of that. If that's okay with you, that's how we would like to see this unfold.
Thank you.
You with me on that?
I am.
Good. So as I mentioned in the lead-in, you're a prolific author, a professor, a lecturer, an activist, You started out, being trained as a petroleum geologist. You worked on the corporate side of things. You worked for Weyerhaeuser, and then you were oil and gas geologist. What flipped you over to the activist side? Was there a profound event? Was there a culmination of things? Was there an awakening of some sort that moved you away from what you said studied in school?
Yeah, it's a great question. I don't think there was. It'd be a good story if it was just like a reckoning moment. But I mean, even when I was in Mississippi looking for oil and gas, I would go canoeing with my Sierra Club friends, and we'd be out, out on wild rivers canoeing in White Bar. We'd go to North Carolina and Alabama and Georgia, whatever. And it just, I was so young, it hadn't really occurred to me that that one, just being an activist, just seemed the way to be in the world when you care about things. And we'd be doing what, I don't mean to be patronizing, but like little things like trash pickup stuff and bankside cleanup days and stuff, just do-gooder stuff. And it just felt right. And this was back in the 80s, before Bill McKibben had published End of Nature. And I thought every 1,000 cubic feet of natural gas that I found was, preventing us from burning coal in China, and that it was a really good thing for the environment. That's that was a generation and a half ago, and that's not accurate. But that was I was pretty happy. I was pretty young and happy being a geologist and an activist. I missed the West. I'd gone to college in northern Utah and studied wildlife science, and I just deeply missed the West. And so, in 87, I headed west, looking for the mountains that I had fallen in love with when I was in college. And even Utah had changed by then. I just kept going north and west until I got, up in this country. And it was love at first sight, and I could work from home. There wasn't internet back then, but I had paper copies of my maps, and my electrical logs, and I just did prospecting as a geologist. And about that time, I was getting in love with writing, and it just gradually took on more and more of my passion in space. That's all I wanted to do, so the geology kind of fell away.
So you didn't study writing. You weren't a journalist, or you weren't trained in that, but you become such a prolific award-winning writer, with a mixture of nonfiction and fiction, and your story prize book, for a little while is 400 pages of beautifully written, among the best written short stories anywhere. How did you develop your or hone your craft in that without any, any professional training to do it?
It's again, it's a good question. And I mean, I don't want to sound immodest by, that your premise that I succeeded, but I do work hard at it, and I am pleased with the short stories that I've published. I mean, you should see the ones I don't publish, like that. But I guess the answer to your question was slowly, teaching myself. It has occurred to me that learning to look for oil and gas is like the same neurological wiring for creating a story. You have a few clues. You're trying to put together a narrative about where the treasure is, the hidden treasure, the resolution, the epiphany, whatever, and you're searching with not as much data as you would like. Specificity matters hugely. I think of a story as being a dream, and when I would be mapping, these underground architectures, these underground structures and stratigraphic traps and fault lines and such, I would be in a dreamland. Like, I couldn't see it, but I could believe it was real, and I'd be, drawing maps of it. And that's the world of the short story, really. So I was kind of learning without knowing I was learning.
It's interesting because reading different Montana-based writers, you write about the what yak type wilderness in the same way, to me, that like James Lee Burke writes about the Louisiana Bayou. The way he describes it, you can feel like you're in it. You can feel the humidity. You can feel the need for a beer or something. And then when you write about the wilderness, you feel like you're out there. You can feel like you're stepping on, sticks and hearing them crack, and you have a whole different approach to it. And I find it very interesting. You're in the Yaak Valley, and a lot of your work is around that. And it's one of the most isolated parts of the West, and one of the most isolated parts of Montana. What's so special about the Yaak Valley?
There are a lot of things that are special about it. At 30,000 feet or 65,000 feet, whatever, it's two weather systems and two landforms. It's the Pacific Northwest, and yet it's the Rocky Mountains. And so you've got that rain and rot and snow, inland rainforest from the west, and then you've got the fire and ice, the glaciated country that comes over from Flathead. So it's got at least twice as much diversity because of that. 20, I, like, you can't define a place by numbers, but it boggles me that 25% of the entire state's list of sensitive species are found on the one national forest there in the Yaak, the Kootenai. It's extraordinary. It's the lowest elevation. It's the wettest. It's the farthest north. It's just it's a speaking of James Lee Burke. I mean, it's swampy and buggy. It's Yeah, it's just trippy. It's not a place for people, really. It's kind of a biological wilderness, not a recreational one.
Yet you're there, and then you tell the stories and bring the Yaak Valley to people who've never been there and maybe will never go there.
Yeah.
As I've looked at your work and read some of it, how do you decide when you're, developing your story ideas or thinking about something that you want to share with an audience? How do you decide whether to keep it in the non-fiction
Wow.
genre or in the fiction genre?
Man, I was afraid you're going to ask that.
Uh-oh.
It's just it's I can't explain it. It just is a feel. The closest I can come to describing, and it's maddeningly unspecific, is that fiction has a little extra spirit or oomph or funk or feral quality to it. There's something deeply unresolved and potentially, even if mildly dangerous, it's got some sharp edge. It's just, I'm speaking in abstractions, none of the things that
Sure.
you can paint a picture of, but fiction just has a little more. It takes a lot, for an
Well, it
idea to
also
set.
has a little more leeway, right? Because it's fiction. It doesn't have to necessarily be factually,
Right.
accurate.
Well, you're navigating your imagination, right? Where your imagination takes over. How do you know that that doesn't happen with nonfiction is always my question.
Well, it does. No, it's a
Does.
great point. And you have to as a nonfiction writer, you have to be aware of the reader and the expectations and, for lack of a better word, rules or guidelines. But no, it's a really good point. The same desire to push against borders or limits or explore, hidden corners or unseen corners, it exists in both genres. But that idea about what to start with, do you go, down the left fork to nonfiction or the right fork to fiction? It's just some haunting, rich thing that it's there or it's not. The default is I want a thing to be fiction, but my bar of what makes a good story is so high that I'd say 80 to 90% of the time, the genre calls for nonfiction. It's just got to be something unsolved, deeply interesting, and conflictual for fiction.
So can you share with us what you're working on now in terms of writing?
I'm working on this Black Ram project. It's just all Black Ram all the time. When you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. When you have this ancient inland rainforest that's been threatened with clear cutting for 8 years now, I go to bed thinking, what can I do? And I wake up thinking, what can I do? I'm just in service to it, and it's all I'm writing about now, in different ways, trying to
So, is
find
there
it.
a villain in that story?
Is there a villain? That's a great darn question. That's a really great question. There's always a villain. A good story has conflict, but though we know how those stories end. With land use issues, we can't afford to lose this battle. So I chose to change my style, for lack of a better word, and not address villains or villainry, but instead just turn my back on the idea of a villain and just embrace what it is I love about this place and explore its It's mystery. I've been recruiting, our artists from around the country to come experience it and then share their responses. And my, for 40 years, almost 40 years, I've been, an activist up there, bringing in scientists and arguing in court and arguing in public comments about, basal area and carbon storage and genetic isolation of this or that endangered species and limiting factors and human caused more, just all the science. And we win some, we lose some, but this place is so special, it we cannot afford to lose it. We have to. I think what I realized is it just gave me permission. Like when something so hugely important is on the line, you're going to choose to defend it with love, not fury or fear or hate or anger or rage, which is, I can do that easy. I've been doing that easy for a long time. This has to be this place deserves something different.
So for our listeners, to put this in sort of a manageable perspective, there's a 90,000 acre piece of land that is almost like forest primeval with 100 year, multi-hundred year old trees and all of that, that have been approved by the Forest Service for clear cutting, right? Is that was the basic
Yeah, the
situation?
project area is 95,000 acres, and again, we're getting into numbers when I really want to be, bringing in the poets and painters. But
Right.
this 95,000 acre geographic area, it's only I use air quotes for the word only, is only about 4,000 acres of clear cutting in it. But it's stacked. This project is stacked next to five other projects that create kind of this rolling thunder. It sounds like I'm talking about the villain. I'll get off the villain in a second. So third of a million acres being actively managed right now, without any EIS or anything. It's kind of rogue country up there, but I'm not angry about it. I'm jo overjoyed at the opportunity to bring what I think makes us most human is art, to this conversation. And I think protecting this place by having it become a cultural landmark, a cultural treasure, that's going to be a more lasting protection than anything else we could do. And it's been a great joy to, Clyde Aspavig has just finished this incredible 36 by 42 inch painting this summer. Monte Dolak is doing a huge mural. Ada Limón, the poet laureate, came in and has written a couple of beautiful poems. She read one of them to President and First Lady Biden. Just the Maggie Rogers, Rob Quist has written a song in the Old Forest and played his guitar. Just the outpouring of support from the artist community is it's really fun. It's really fun.
And what happens if it's not protected? What are the consequences of that?
A good fiction writer can be melodramatic, and so
Right.
if you'll indulge me,
I will.
we burn. It's one seed, one tree, one guitar, one forest. Yes, it's in the far northwest corner of Montana, but if we succeed in designating it as a climate refuge dedicated to storing a lot of carbon and long-term safekeeping of big trees, old forest, then that clears the way to do the same thing all along the northern latitudes in a circle all around the globe. And that can slow the rate of climate change by up to 12%. It's an enormous
Wow.
precedent, and so there's a lot at stake. If I was, being a fiction writer, I have to talk about the human spirit, the human relationship with self. I think it's an opportunity. Protecting Black Ram is an opportunity to recalibrate our relationship with nature, and therefore with ourselves. It's an opportunity to do something really big and really good when we thought those opportunities have already gone by. It's just everything, really.
So when you
You've
come
done.
down to it, how do you protect it? Like what are you trying to enact through the different awareness projects you're doing?
Well, I think as an artist, our job is to love it and get other people to love it and the idea of it and the story of it. One tree being made into a guitar, trying to save her old forest and all other old forests from that. That's a good story. And when we're listening to music, there's no, again, neurological processing, no central nervous system re recalibrating the senses of sound. They just come into your ears, into your body as they are. They're not repackaged
Right.
or manipulated. And that's, I think that's the message and the medium for this conversation and this story and this opportunity. We are intrigued with what it might look like, logistically, not just all artsy fartsy, but we have so few grizzly bears in the Yak, and they're one of the things that make the Yak be the Yak. There's an average of 3.2 females with cubs per year up there, and that's just, again, the ridiculousness of numbers. How do you have 3.2 females with cubs? But some years you have three, some years you have four, I guess. Anyway, it's the rarest. It's the most endangered population of grizzlies in North America. It would be nice to have Department of Interior have a greater authorization and direction to recover these dang bears. The Kootenai National Forest has lost 8 of its last 10 cases in federal court based on their inability to recover the population and their unwillingness, their disinterest in it. That's a lot of money. We need, that's a lot of years. We need to try something different. It's a perfect opportunity to bring in a partnership where DOI helps USFS and Department of Ag do the right thing and do a better thing in this special area. And we want to get a tribal nonprofit to be engaged in these management decisions. That's been too long lacking. I mean, we're, those of us in Montana are so, well, I don't even want to talk about that. Yeah, there's a secret place that I love that's managed by, it's a tribal place, and I just don't want to advertise it. Yeah, it's so, but it's good, and wow, they're doing it right.
Well, one of the things that I find so well, I guess, represented in this campaign, in this whole project, is that you've, by involving the arts and by creating the, Breedlove Black Ram guitar, and we're all in this together, and tying Jeff Bridges and all that, you've added some, meat to the bones in a way that people that are not activists can understand this in a different sort of way than just this is just another group trying to save trees somewhere. You've really put a lot of handles and ways to put your arms around this by the creation of all this and the guitar festival that's going to happen on September 28th. All of this adds something and makes it in a way more real than just reading words on the paper about the numbers, 95,000 acres and 3.2 bears, that's sort of abstract, but a fallen tree made into a beautiful guitar instead of tearing down a living tree to do it, artists drawing, paintings, all these sorts of things have made this larger than life and made and brought life to this in a way that other causes haven't had that same kind of additions added to it, that same type of strong across the board kind of support that you've been able to pull together. It's not just you that's doing it, of course, there's other
No.
people involved. So talk a little bit about how that all has been orchestrated.
It's just asking for help, asking your friends for help, and again, having a good story. One seed, one tree, one guitar, one forest. Can she protect her forest or not? It's just a really it's a story we understand. I think our species is so new in the world and so frightened, understandably, that we it's an opportunity for us to reconnect with the nature that we came from and became estranged from. And it's it, I think the minute you hear the story, you empathize with the opportunity before us. And it's just an easy, it's a short putt. It's a really easy act. And we're so lucky in Montana to have such diverse and spirited and impassioned art and artists. I worked as a geologist in Mississippi, like we were talking about, and there was a not very nice joke about Mississippi's economic shortcomings and literacy shortcomings and stuff. And there's all this great literature coming out of Mississippi, and the joke or so, what passed for the joke was there are more writers in Mississippi than there are readers. And it makes me think about Montana, though. We have so many artists, and not just literary artists. I mean, we have I've never seen such diversity of artists. I'll stand our artists up against New York's diversity of of art forms. And it's no secret. It's the open spaces and the space around us that gives us the inspiration and the belief, the freedom that we can reach beyond ourselves, that we have to reach beyond ourselves when there's that much space. And yeah, it's just it's I feel like it's a good story for our time. We're trying to sell tickets. We're just grinding it out. We've priced the event really low because we want a full house. We want everybody to hear the guitar. Breedlove is filming a documentary about it, and it's bringing me into things that I have no capacity or skill sets for. Like I try and post and bump along on Instagram and Facebook and stuff, but it terrifies me to think that the force might be dependent on my ability to navigate that milieu. But anyway, the post that I'm thinking of, it's corny, but in I don't know how that line went in The Big Lebowski, but it's like something like, well, sometimes there's a man, sometimes there's a time, and sometimes there's a man. So yeah, thinking about it personally. Sometimes there's a man, sometimes there's a time, sometimes there's a guitar. Because Jeff's embrace of this story has just been a real gift. He's bringing in a lot of folks who might not have heard of the story otherwise.
It's hard for him not to, when he talks about this, embrace his Big Lebowski persona in that. He just because it fits so well with his, that character's, metaphysical, being fits so nicely with this that it was fun listening to him talk about
It really is, yeah. It's a total abiding. It's a beautiful
it.
thing.
Yeah, the dude abides, right? Exactly.
It does.
So tell us more now about the guitar festival and how that fits into all of this.
Yeah, we have had some great success advertising the issue, among environmental groups around the country. But as we've covered, we want this to be a cultural embrace, not just a mainstream green embrace. And so we've had articles in Scientific American and upcoming one in Outside Magazine and New Yorker and stuff. But I was haunted by something that Al Gore said when he lost by 534 votes a presidential election once upon a time. He said, "You know what? I didn't take care of work at home. I didn't win my home state of Tennessee. And if I'd won Tennessee, we wouldn't be arguing about 534 hanging chads." And it was just such a bittersweet and responsible and honest thing to consider. And yeah, we need to be reaching out to Montana, not just, not just the coast. And so it's going to be a big party, a big celebration, and a lot of goodwill and joy and some grief, as we celebrate the burning that we inhabit and that there's no turning back from, but also celebrate taking ownership of a path
Well,
into it.
you call Montana your home. Montana is your home, and this is where you do so much of your work. I mean, you haven't made your task easy, right? Because you're convincing people here of what you're trying to preserve and save. It would be much easier if you were on the coast. It's like an audience of you don't have to convert them. They're already singing from the same choir book. But what's it like doing your work here in Montana?
It's gratifying, and it's like, I fought some hard battles. Every time I'd go in a mill trying to help find more ASQ to keep the mill open, the mill would end up closing until it was like, oh, what's the commonality here? Anytime Rick shows up to help, the mill's going to go out of business. It's like, I fought some hard fights, but this is nobody wants to cut these big trees. I mean, this is just this ridiculous back to numbers. Previous administration issued an executive order directing the Forest Service to increase volume by 40% on the Kootenai. You can't increase volume by 40% unless you go after the last big ones. And anyone who sees them says, no, that we've got plenty of small ones around town to cut. This is ridiculous. It's just about numbers. 60 million board feet of giant pickles up there on the Canadian border in a swamp. It's like, no, they shall not pass. But, no.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, let's
So
do
it's
a quick.
all that to say, it's a really easy argument. Like, what?
It's it,
Okay, you want
right.
this?
Let's do a quick ID. Our guest is Rick Bass, who is bringing his show to the Wilma Theater on it's the 28th of September,
28th.
Arnie.
Yeah. With
Rick.
James McMurtry and a whole cast of other folks that are going to be there. And I think our listeners know that James is the son of Larry McMurtry of Lonesome Dove fame and many other great novels. So, and he's a good artist in his own right. He's a fantastic folk singer.
Yeah,
And
we
who else
really.
is going to be joining us on that, Rick? Who else is
We've
going to be
got.
there?
That's a great question. It's going to be like 15 presenters and performers. We've got these amazing light projectionists. This thing called Animal Land, where they take these weird videos of animals moving, and they kind of do a black and white silver nitrate X-ray video of them walking in slightly stuttered slow motion, and then they turn and look at the viewer with these incredibly ghostly, haunting, penetrating stares, and they broadcast them across walls and ceilings, giant animals, and it's just eerie. And so that's going to be there. They performed at the Wilma earlier this winter at a grizzly festival, and people are still talking about it. So we're excited about that, the light show. Incredible poet laureate Beth Ann Finley is going to read a poem from being up in the Black Ram Forest, and some poems that she and children wrote when they went in there that are extraordinary, just extraordinary. And Jeffrey Foucault, longtime Missoula visitor, is going to be playing, a really hot guitarist and great songwriter as well. Pico Auth, this world-renowned violinist, is going to come play. She loves, the quality wood and quality instruments, and she's going to play John Prine's song Paradise along with Caroline Keyes and Nate Beale and Gibson Hartwell, which I think that's going to be the highlight for me of the evening. It's right in the middle. That's kind of the song that this guitar was built for. I always envisioned this guitar learning. She doesn't know anything, and so she has to learn every song and have those sonic waves go through the old spruce that is her top, and open the lignin and the cell walls and create paths, networks to more gracefully and richly, greater resonance, communicate those sound waves. And the more the song is played, the better the guitar gets at articulating it, and deeper the sound. And so that's the song I most want her to learn. So that's gonna be sweet. Leslie Kay, the Montana Band of the Kootenai, is going to play a traditional song on a flute from wood from Northwest Montana. Excited for that. He's super, super eloquent. Bill McKibben is going to be emceeing. He's so funny and so fierce. It's just a beautiful moderator of such events. I'm sure I'm leaving people out. I'm going to do some spoken words with that Animal Land light projection project. C.D. Saturn is going to do a, I mean, I don't want to give away everything, but it's going to be a lot of riches, a lot.
And it's a, the tickets are $20, and the proceeds go towards what?
I'm not a good businessman. We're hemorrhaging. The proceeds will go to paying our obligations, but there's just no turning back. I mean, we have to. This just has to be a great show for the Missoula community. Wants it and has asked for it, and I'm just honored that the businesses in Missoula are embracing this story, this campaign, this bold gambit. The $20, we're asking for $20 plus donations, will help pay the artists, fair prices that we've incurred getting them here. They're coming, some are coming from a long way away.
And hopefully folks will be encouraged to donate when they're there as well, so that's the nice thing about having a full house. It's just more opportunities.
If we lose $90,000 or $100,000, which is pretty much close to what we've got, I don't want to have any regret. I don't want to say, well, I cut corners here, and look, we
Right.
lost the forest, but we didn't lose money, So
Sure.
there's no hope on this. It'll be a great show. I mean, money back guaranteed
Rick,
for sure.
how often do you come down to like Missoula? And I know you were in Belgrade yesterday, you said, or Bozeman. What's your, I guess, as needed?
Yeah, there's a lot of conservation opportunity here. A lot of meetings. My partner lives north of Bozeman, so I'm on the road back and forth between here and there. A fair bit. The stays there get
Okay.
longer and less driving, but I still am back and forth between Yak and Gallatin County, which is pretty trippy.
Wow.
It makes me love, the forest ever more when I get back.
How do you stay, politically How do you navigate those waters with, as politics becomes so much in the front, of everything that we do now? The lens that we look through is political and politics. How do you navigate that successfully?
It's what I do. It's what I've learned to do for, close to 40 years. I've learned from a lot of really, really fine minds and strategy, and still am learning from so many great strategicians or whatever tacticians. I mean, politics at the end of the day is a story, and this, all those years, a lot of my teachers and mentors in politics are getting old, and I've learned a lot from them, and they've taught me. I've made a lot of mistakes and learned from my mistakes, and their successes. It's just time. I'm entering old age, and it's time to get the job done and do it right and get a win, and one that is not a loss for anybody. That's what, again, this is a really easy big campaign, and that gives me energy to keep from burning out. Like, if you burn out when you're looking at Clyde Aspovig's painting that he's, put his heart and soul into at the peak, at the height of his talent, then yeah, you need to get another job.
How do you, the business of being an activist, you kind of talked about that a little bit before, when you're talking about the financials. What type of support system do you have to help you kind of with the administrative business side to what you're doing? Or is that all fall on your shoulders?
No, I've got a very small handful of volunteers, and we've Blake Nicolazzo, Bonfire Brands, has been an incredible consultant in this, and she's picked us up out of the gutter so many times with things we've done that I've done incorrectly. Matt Holloway up in the Flathead has been a gem, just answers email, anything that he's doing, he gets it done. My partner Carter, she's been really kind of working on this full time as well. So there's a little core of us that believes in this with every ounce of our being, and it's and just every day is more beautiful than the one before.
And is this community that's being created of all of these craftspeople and artists and artisans and musicians and painters, how do they fit together with the Montana Project?
We're just celebrating them. The Montana Project is just created to celebrate and empower artists in advocating for their values. For some of the artists that we embrace don't need any help advocating, and others appreciate the attention, and we put them in places to be heard and seen and succeed critically. And sometimes
You mentioned earlier, the Kootenai Forest, and you touched on the Native American population in the state. How do they feel about this, and what role have they played, and what is their position on all of this?
the one thing I have learned is to never even remotely get in a position of appearing to speak for any tribe. And so I just stand by that. I just am not comfortable even giving a to such a casual and useful question. I mean, I just don't want to risk representing.
Sure, but they're involved.
We've always been reaching out, and we have some support, but it would be, I would feel uncomfortable
Sure, I
listing
understand.
it and naming it, but thank you for asking. I mean, it's a question that needs to be asked of all issues in Montana, of course, and too little, too late, but also never too late.
True.
This is so much at the core of, not only what Montanans think of about their state, the fourth largest state, and the beauty and protecting it, and for better or worse, it comes up in every political campaign. Who's protecting the rights of Montana, fishermen and hunters, and that's always a germane issue, and it always harkens back to me to the old West, where there was the fight between the sheep herders and the ranchers, and it's all about
the resources and controlling them. I was going to say, Scott, you've been involved in lots of issues that involve artists and entertainment industry and worthwhile causes. Is there any other one that you've seen that is as integrated in many ways as this is? I mean, it just seems like it all has, a way of fitting together that makes a lot of sense.
No, I agree with you, Arnie. I think that there, that is the opportunity and the challenge is to integrate as successfully as Rick is doing with his small but dutiful team, right? And it's an opportunity, but it's such a challenge because the alignment of everything is just really, really difficult. I think to like I liken it to what they do with the Tibet House in the Philip Glass community, and what he does in New York with different artists and bringing them all together and that kind of ongoing initiative. Very different, but very, it reminds me of that in some ways. I don't know if you're familiar with that, Rick.
I am, and I was thinking of Maya Lin as well. But it's interesting. You're mostly, talking about urban areas, and it just kind of, I had this vision when you were describing it. It's like everybody has to kind of come up there and walk in the old forest with me, and then we go have a burger and a beer at the Dirty Shame or the tavern, and it's like the years add up and the art adds up, and it's like it's not a bad way to spend your late years, taking
Right.
artists that you love and respect and admire to show them something that blows their mind away, and without fail, their mouths drop open. It's so messy in there, it's so tangled. You think, how can I even walk through this? Like everything's going every which way. There's a lot of huge, giants on the ground rotting and having vines crawling over them, and then they're resting on other rotting ones, and their giant ones standing up, growing out of the hearts of the rotting ones, and they just stop and they look around, and your first impulse is like, this is chaos. And then because you can't really see a path through it at first, you have to stand there and just look at it, and then you relax and you start to see, oh, well, if I was going to go see that big tree back there, I would take 3 steps to the right here and then step over this branch and over this log and then 7 steps to the left, and you just get lost, or what we think of as lost, but you're moving circuitously toward the place you want to get to, and you just start seeing little things, and you're seeing incredible order out of what 15 minutes before you thought was incredible disorder and chaos. And it's transformative.
How hard is it to bring people up there? Like how much planning does it take to do that?
I don't think it's too hard. We just email them up, get a car for them at the airport and give them directions. Sometimes they find us easily. Sometimes they have to stop and ask around, and we go in the next day and we get an Airbnb for them, and it's not too hard. It's just, it takes time, but it's just the cumulative effects of it are just, I don't ever want to stop. I mean, like, I'd love to live to be 100 and keep taking artists in there to see what comes.
And you notice that even artists who have
Yes.
immersed themselves in nature and a lot of other places are overwhelmed by, this experience just 200 miles away from Missoula. They're like transported into a completely different environment.
We had this fine arts photographer from New York, Peter Kayafis, and he just, he had not ever been in such a place, and there were no sirens, there were no taxis, and he was just moved, moved almost to tears. And then Kristen Browski, the burliest, hunter, angler, poet, since Jim Harrison is in there, and he's looking up like a kid with his mouth wide open and stuff. And there's stuff in it's this is just not anything that is seen anywhere else in the world. And we just have to protect it.
When you talk about this, it just keeps on reminding me. Was it Wadsworth? This is the forest primeval. I mean, that's what I'm thinking of when I think about this.
It is so primeval. It's funny you use that word. It is a primary forest. It has never been logged. Large portions of it show no sign of having ever burned. I mean, it's a swamp. It protects itself against wildfire in a fire ecosystem. Somehow there's a self-regulating process that
Like it has its own consciousness as far
it's
as has
so,
its
I mean, that
own.
sounds,
I
I'll
know.
deny I said it, but
I said
I
it.
can't access it, but it communicates. We know that. And it doesn't communicate to me, but I feel awe when I'm seeing how everything happens in its own time. I mean, you'll see, it's called gap creation, where a big giant comes down through the canopy and then a slash of sunlight rushes in like a note of music, and little hemlock jump in reaching for that light, and but you'll have willow and alder in there. It's unlike any old forest that you've ever been
Wow.
in. It's just so joyous, all this up and down reaching for light, and then it shades out, and it's time. It had its time in the sun and its voice, and now it's time for the shade tolerance to get bigger. The cedar and hemlock in there are so enormous. It's just, there's no place like it in the world. Thanks
Well,
for asking about it.
let's do this. Let's take a quick break. Our guest is Rick Bass, and we will be right back after these words. Okay, Arnie, we are back with our guest, Rick Bass.
Rick, you've woven this magical tapestry of the Black Ram Project. How do people get involved in the project? And maybe a good way to begin to get involved is to participate in or attend Black Ram Guitar Festival on September 28th at the Wilma Theater. What are the logistics of all that? How do they get a hold of you? How do they get a hold of the project? How do they go to the event?
Yeah, no, great. Thank you for asking. The Montana Project's website, montanaproject.org, is a good place. We're selling tickets through blackramguitarfest.org. Yaak Valley Forest Council is an activist group that's working to protect the area. So there are a lot of portals, a lot of entries. They say Missoula doesn't buy tickets until the day of show, and man, that culture is making it hard on me. I really want everybody who can be there to be there. So yeah, if you think you can make the show, please
Sure.
don't wait till the last minute. We've got some seats that won't be there, come showtime. But
Sure. And
again,
also they can buy it appropriately named, and they can go to Log Jam.
totally. Yep,
They
totally.
can go to
Log
Log
Jam is.
Jam and buy tickets, and Missoulians are very familiar with going to Log Jam Productions and logging in and buying tickets that way as well.
Totally. And we've got we've gotten a lot of fun sponsors from around the city and around the state. But yeah, Log Jam is being great. They know the import of the cause. I was almost late to this meeting, or this Zoom, having a meeting with them about, them selling their tickets and us selling ours, and we're all in this together. So
Right.
just get the tickets, doesn't matter where.
And for
All
those
right.
that can't, unfortunately, for those that may not be able to make it to the event, how can they become involved with the
Wow.
project?
For sure. I would say montanaproject.org or yakvalley.org. And yak has two A's, as we mostly know.
We're a long way from Fort Worth, Texas, aren't we? From
Yeah.
where you grew up. Did you ever envision this being what you would be doing at 65 years old, or
No. Yeah, or 66 or 67.
66, right? 60.
I didn't, and I mean it's pressure. There's the pressure of the show, which is just going to be transcendent. And then after the show, then what? Yeah, then there's the pressure of getting this designated, doing the
Right.
politics and the
Right.
lobbying and the partnerships and such. And it But it will end. I mean, we will get it protected, and then I can go back to all art all the time. And
All art all the time. That's a great way to leave this
yes.
conversation. Rick, you've been a wonderful and delightful guest. We really appreciate it.
Love
Likewise.
talking with you, Rick. Y'all
Yeah,
too.
let's do
Thanks
it
for the
again.
question. Anytime, just let you know where to find me now in the
Yep.
front seat of the Subaru.
Yaak
Yeah.
Valley.
Let's just do this. Arnie, let's sign off. I will see you next Sunday.
See you next Sunday, Scott. You guys take care.
Thank you for listening to What Do You Know?
I can't wait for the next show, Scott.
I'm excited too, Arnie. If you'd like to suggest a guest, send me an email at scottrichman@townsquaremedia.com. We'll see you next week. And thanks for listening to News Talk KGVO.